Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. In today's episode, I'm sharing some of the most open and insightful conversations with sexologists I've had over the past few years. Sexual empowerment coach Amy Jo Goddard brings us all you need to know about the clitoris, but we're afraid to ask, and how to manage your insecurities so they don't ruin your relationship. Sex therapist Hernando Chavez shares pleasurable ways to ease into backdoor sex. Teacher and porn star legend Nina Hartley explains why you should never feel guilty about pursuing a non-traditional relationship and how to find the right one that works for you. And sex educators Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoin-Berg give specific ways to break through kink stereotypes that are holding you back. And how to have fun with it. Because, hey, sex is fun. All this and more. Enjoy the show.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily, you got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's
got
to have her standards. Oh, my.
Do women know about shrinkage?
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, go to sexwithemily.com. Check out our website, our blogs. We have so much information up there to help you have better sex and relationships. Oh, and today, you guys, February 6th, take a coffee break and join me. I'm doing a Facebook Live and an Instagram Live. My Facebook Live is 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern, and Instagram Live is 4 o'clock Pacific and 7 o'clock Eastern. So get your sex and relationship questions ready, mark your calendars, set a reminder, and I'm so excited to see you there. I'll be answering all of your sex relationship questions. If you've got Valentine's Day questions, I'll be there for you. So it's facebook.com/sexwithemily and Instagram is @sexwithemily, along with Twitter and everywhere else that you might follow me on social media, which I love that you do. Okay, today's show is really fun. Let's get into our interviews. If you want to hear the full episodes, look at the links in the show notes, which can be found at sexwithemily.com. Your book, okay, Amy Jo Goddard, they can find you at amyjogoddard.com.
Yep.
G-O-D-D-A-R-D. And this is all on my website as well. Mm. At Amy Jo Goddard on Twitter and facebook.com/AmyJoGoddard.coach. Mm-hmm. And then your book, The Lesbian Sex Secrets for Men. You released an expanded second edition. So what is new in the book?
A bunch of things.
I'd
it
like
was
to
so
know.
Fun. It's like you often don't get the second chance, you know?
Right. How amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. The book has sold so well that when I went back to Penguin Random House with the new book, they were like, wait, what? We don't have an ebook of lesbian sex secrets for men? I'm like, yeah, what's wrong? So yeah, it was great. We got to actually get a much better cover for it because I always hated the first cover.
I want to see it. Okay.
The cover's fabulous. And yeah, so I got to edit through and really update the language. I mean, it's a 15-year-old book.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It came out in 2000.
Wow.
So I was a wee 29-year-old at the time. So yeah, and then we added sections on things that weren't really happening.
Like anal.
We added a lot of stuff about anal. Yeah, a lot of stuff about that. And then
not that it wasn't happening.
Not that it wasn't happening. Yeah. We had a chapter on anal then. We just added more to it.
Right.
More stuff about technology and sex. And then one of my favorite sections we added, well, a couple. One, we added something on polyamory because that wasn't really in the conversation at the time. I was doing it, but it wasn't being talked about it in the same way. And then we added a section for guys who are dating bisexual women because we've talked to so many of them over the years. And that can be a really big struggle.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know?
God. So what do you tell them? What's your advice?
That, you know, they're going to eventually leave you.
It does sometimes happen.
Yeah.
It does. It's tricky. You know, it's not an easy thing for a lot of people. And because sometimes what it comes down to is a woman having to make the choice of choosing the relationship or choosing her sexuality,
right,
which is the choice a lot of people get in, whether
exactly
they're bisexual or something
so
else,
true,
because they might be in a sexless marriage where they're like, well, I could stay with you and be in the marriage with you, or I could choose my sexuality and go have the sex life I want
right
to have.
Exactly.
You know, I talk to people who are in that struggle all the time. So, you know, I think it's really about communicating it, negotiating it, figuring out what's going to work for both of you and whether there is a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's something women really do need to explore.
Right.
And they're gonna eventually need to do it, whether they do it now or do it later. And so not having the conversation or addressing it just, again, sweeps under the rug, and then it becomes that elephant in the
exactly
in the living room
right
at some point.
Exactly. You got to figure out what kind of life you want to live.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but I think guys who are with, who attract those kinds of women tend to be awesome guys. All the ones I've known,
yeah,
I'm like, yep, you're an awesome guy.
How would you describe that kind of guy?
What's
the similar traits?
I think that they tend to have a little bit of a better understanding of gender equity and
mm-hmm
what that looks like in a relationship. And I personally think, well,
better lovers, what?
I think bisexual men are definitely better lovers. I don't know about the men who partner with
right
bisexual women.
Got it.
But
what are some of the, can we just get into the sex tips real quick? So
sure,
what are some of the most popular sex tips in the book, or you think that were really, that like a lesbian needs to tell guys this, like about women's bodies? What would you think is a chapter or something that keeps getting brought up to you that people really enjoyed around the sex tips that you could share?
I think a big piece is really understanding the body and all the parts of the clitoris that never get talked about. I'm an anatomy geek. I love teaching anatomy. And every time I teach it, people are like, what? You know,
right,
I taught
a
class
tell us
Pleasure Chest recently,
yeah,
about this. So
what don't we know?
Well, you know, the clitoris, I think we learn to think of it as like, it's that little
right
that little button. And if I push it just right,
right,
just
yeah
scream in ecstasy. You know, it's not like that. So it's got,
I
you
wish
know, all the same parts, actually, that male genitalia have. They're just organized differently. And so there's two large erectile, they're called crura, or
right,
legs that run underneath the labia. And so actually bringing a lot of blood flow, starting with a lot of blood flow into the entire vulva, brings a lot of that blood into all her erectile parts that are mostly inside. The only part you actually get to see is the clitoral head.
Right.
She's got a shaft. She's got the legs. There's all this spongy tissue, you know. And so also there's spongy tissue on every side of the vagina. And so that's all erectile tissue. So even though a lot of women don't have orgasms through intercourse per se, a lot of their pleasure is derived from all of that
area,
delicious
right
tissue
mm-hmm
being stimulated.
I know, and I think people don't know. They don't know, right? I love that you're mm-hmm talking. We talk about this too, that it's not just about that.
Yeah.
The labia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so much.
There's so much.
So rich.
And then, so when people really rush to intercourse, you're totally like bypassing the opportunity to really create a lot of pleasure for your partner. Because, you know, and then what ends up happening is women start to think, oh, sex hurts or intercourse hurts. I want to avoid that because they've been with partners who aren't actually doing their due diligence, bringing that blood flow, getting the vagina ready to want it.
Right.
And so then they have a partner that starts avoiding intercourse. And
right
they're like, what's wrong? I'm like, well,
you yeah,
got,
you weren't turned on and you were right for the right. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we talk about. Foreplay. Not
yeah
a suggestion.
Why
a
are you yelling at me?
Just because we talk about
morning
it.
You're the representation
yeah
of
I'm
all
like,
men
geez,
right now.
Yes.
He's a lot of pressure.
Lot of
but one of us answer some emails. from all listeners?
Right, cool. Yeah.
How'd that be, Amy? Okay, absolutely. We've got some emails from the people. Thank you for emailing me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. I love hearing from you. It's awesome. And would you please also include your name, how old you are, how you listen, which is so awesome. Sexual guilt. Emily, I've been listening to your podcast recently and I've really connected with your show. It's incredibly informative and insightful. Recently, I've been struggling with somewhat of a weird issue that I haven't been able to get over. I experience a lot of guilt after having sex. The sex ranges from long-term relationships to one-night stands. But every time I have sex, I feel this weird guilt bubble up inside me and I feel like I did something wrong. I'm 24. This has been going on since I was 17. I could really use some advice. Am I alone in feeling like this? What insights do you have on this? Thanks, Martin. So, Amy Jo, I thought you may be able to help me answer this question for Martin.
Yeah, great question. I think a lot of people feel that way.
The shame and the guilt.
Oh, my God. Mm. People hold themselves back from so much pleasure and joy because of feeling guilty.
Right. How can we exactly, all the time?
I mean, Martin, I think guilt is a wasted... It's wasted energy. It's
such a waste.
I think guilt really does nothing for us but make us feel bad.
It's a waste. My mom always says it's a wasted emotion. It's not even an emotion, though. She's like, it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
It is.
Truly. Mm-hmm. What happened when you were 17? Like, did something occur?
Well, that's what I want to know. Exactly. I think that there might be some trauma or some issues.
Yeah.
Something happened with a partner. Or
it could have been like my mom who said, if you're going to have sex, you're going to get her pregnant from the first time. Like. Right. Just messing with your head, you know?
Yeah. And he's saying like every single time it could be a relationship or one night stand. So I think there's going to be some work here trying to figure out what happened at that age.
Yeah. I mean, what was the genesis of that? What's really the core? Like what's underneath the guilt? Because it's really not about the guilt. It's about something happened that you never made peace with or gave yourself permission for.
Exactly.
I really want to encourage you to figure out that thing. And then just, I think you have to give yourself permission. That's one of the elements in the book. It's like we need so much permission to just be who we are as sexual people.
I know.
And like what we like.
And it's okay. Like, there was no normal. So don't compare yourself. Yeah. I know. Exactly. It's so true.
Yeah.
And I would say, I mean, and also this might not be something he can give himself permission, but this might not be something that he could work out on his own. So I would say, you know.
Get some support.
Get some support.
Absolutely.
Therapy.
Absolutely.
Okay. We got another email. Hey, Emily. Fellow Wolverine here. Hell yes. Hail, yes. Hail. Because hail to the victors. My school. 28-year-old female and listen religiously on the iTunes app. I appreciate everything you do to help make our society more sexually knowledgeable, and your co-host's advice has definitely educated me and improved my sex life.
Of course.
All that said, I have a dilemma I would love your guidance on. I've recently started dating a guy, 29, who's absolutely incredible. We clicked almost immediately and learned quickly that we are very sexually compatible. I've never been so consistently aroused just thinking about a guy, let alone when we're actually together. My problem is when we became Facebook friends, I discovered that he still has several pictures of his ex-girlfriend posted, despite telling me that he had been single for quite some time. While this is somewhat of a red flag, my main concern is that she's an incredibly beautiful girl, great body, gorgeous face. I'm no troglodyte or anything. I just have a lot of insecurities related to stretch marks from weight loss and scars from abuse. I also have the problem of being a unicorn who thoroughly enjoys getting turned on or enjoys slash getting turned on by having giving head. And I worry that perhaps he's settling for me as a reflection of what he actually wants, which is her, the ex. Is there any way to approach these insecurities without seeming like a crazy person? If there is a male present to weigh in, how aware are men of these flaws that women obsess about? I do my best to give off confidence when we're intimate, as I know this is the key to sexiness, but I can't help but wonder if he is constantly comparing me to what he had before. Any help you can give would be greatly appreciated. You're so wonderful. Thanks again. Maddie.
Oh,
there's
man.
There's a lot here.
A lot going on.
Remember the days before pre-internet, guys?
Yeah.
This is just... She got all that from photographs on Facebook.
From an ex-girlfriend.
Right.
Yes.
One picture.
Right.
All
She's
that.
She's made up a big story.
Whole story.
Yeah.
Whole backstory. You know,
do you think that men are that concerned? She's worried about the stretch mark. She's worried about...
And you know when I speak, I'm speaking for all men. guys.
The poster child.
Yeah,
this
guys
is what
don't
I get sued.
Think about that stuff at all. They don't care. They're just
happy
to
be there.
Happy to be there.
Happy to be with you.
Time.
Happy to be having sex with you. Happy to be receiving fellatio. You know, all this stuff is being made up in your head. All these insecurities. Like, you should not. If he wanted to be with that person, he would go be with that person. Or right. he would be with somebody similar to whoever that
right.
girl is in the six photographs. Right. You know?
Exactly.
It's like,
You're
just worrying about it way too much. You need to be present in your relationship, and you're causing problems.
She
you're
is.
Causing
like, issues. I think she's sabotaging it. She was just way looking for something because these are already bubbling up below the surface.
How long were they been together?
I don't know.
Did it say? Are they 3 years into a relationship and he still has...
Recent.
It's recent. Okay. I'll tell you this. I never even check my Facebook messages. The thing is full. Like, right. I'm not going back into my photos and deleting photos. I'm not even thinking about that at all.
Right. I mean, I think she's just letting her insecurities get the best of her.
Of course,
I don't think he was being dishonest.
Like I was going to say, if you're 3 years into your relationship and maybe the photos are still up there, you might have
even
a problem.
You know, this idea that we come into a new relationship and suddenly I have no past.
I have no sexual past.
And I've never,
that's my
good
dream.
Good for you that you have this hot guy who used to be with this other hot woman and now he's with you. Like, obviously, you've got something going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're
going to
mess it up. You're basically just throwing a grenade into your relationship.
Right. I mean,
the comparison game never gets you anywhere.
No.
We have to stop doing that.
We do.
And women do this so much. I don't know if is it as bad for men.
I don't
women
know.
Do it
all the time.
Know, and we're taught to compete as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's a part of it. But, you know, it's really something I work with women on in my sexual empowerment programs, because you cannot be empowered and be tearing other women down or constantly comparing yourself and tearing yourself down. That is not an empowered place.
Right.
And everyone has their own thing to offer. Why would you do this to yourself? He gets to have pictures of people.
Right.
I'm not going to give up pictures of my past relationships that are memories for me or people that were important in my life and might still be.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And this is all based on her own interpretation of what happened.
Yeah.
And but you're right. I don't know why women... People always talk about how, especially being in LA, I'm not saying this doesn't happen everywhere, but I remember, I don't know, but just because it's such a, LA is a different world in some ways about like looks and celebrity, but I wasn't just brought up this way. Like, I'm not I'm really not a competitive person, and I always have other issues, but I'm not like a, I'm always like a, let's all bring each other up, bring women up. But I do think that it comes up all the time here. People saying, "Do you find the women really catty here? And are they really competitive?" And I don't remember people asking me that in San Francisco. I'm not saying that whatever it happens everywhere, but I do think it's something that, I mean, if you can get women just to focus, you know, it's a confidence thing and get them to look at and celebrate themselves. But it's just, I think it's just really hard because it's always in your face, especially now with social media and Instagram and you're looking at everything and it's just not helping. Not that women and men haven't felt insecure since the beginning of time.
Yeah. Like I was going to say, I think guys would, some will stew over that, but they would get over it eventually within a few days. They're not going to really bring it into the relationship, you know, because again, I think at the end of the day, they're really happy just to be with you.
Yeah.
And again, I'm speaking for all men.
Right. Thank you. Whenever insecurity in a relationship comes up with clients that I'm working with, I always have them look at, is the insecurity in yourself or is it in the relationship?
Right.
Because I think that's a very, very important distinction to make. Is he really doing anything that is giving you great pause and saying, wow, there's a problem here? It doesn't sound like from what she wrote there
is. No, not at all.
And so then that's her work to do. You know, you've got to do your work on your own insecurity and not project that onto him. If you do, you will lose the relationship. Because that's not sexy.
Right. Not sexy
at
all.
It's really not.
You don't want to get mad and be nagging. Why do you have the picture? I mean, that is sabotaging it. So how would you work with her, for example?
I think to really look at what is it bringing up in you. What, you know, I think you have to get underneath that. And I think it's about her own body insecurity and working on loving her body. And I mean... And I think there's also a piece where she's afraid to let herself actually have the pleasure that she's having. And
right,
I think that people run from pleasure. They feel like the last guy, you know, feeling guilty about pleasure. We feel guilty about feeling good. We are meant to feel good. Pleasure is a gift from spirit, from the universe, from God, you know, whatever you believe in. It is a gift.
We
are
so
meant to feel that.
I know.
why would you put something in the way? She talks about how she's so excited and she's thinking of him. Awesome.
It's our brains focus automatically like, can't be too happy. You better bring this down.
Right.
How can I mess this up?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, we all have that saboteur inside of us.
And I'm here with my friend, Hernando, Dr. Chavez. Hello.
Emily, hello.
You're like playing my little co-host today.
I know. I mean, you're
everywhere. We kicked out Menace. We're like, you know, he can't do anal like you can. So I am glad you're here because it is Anal Sex Month. Happy Anal Sex Month. Every August, it comes around and the back door. And I thought no better person than Dr. Hernando Chavez, who you're a therapist. You see patients, clients. What do you call them? Everything.
Clients.
And which I love that you do that. And people come to see you for, what would you say is the most common things people come see you for?
Ooh, you know, I have a split practice. So half of it is alternative sexuality. They could be fetishist, kinky, into non-monogamy. And the other half will be about sexual concerns. So they might have couples issues, intimacy difficulties. Maybe their penis is not cooperating like they'd like to, or, you know, their vagina or vulva is, you know, not cooperating as well. So it's just people who want to improve their sex life.
Right. That's great. I'm glad they can find it. You can also find Hernando. It's drhernandochavez.com. That's C-H-E-V-E-S. Chavez. It'll also be on our website, Instagram, and Twitter, Hernando_. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low-net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. Chavez. So let's move into a little anal sex because last year around this time we were holing up in my apartment.
That sounds so dirty. Your listeners are like, what the hell are these two doing? This is... Clarify that.
No, we were not... We were not having sex. We were not, no.
Mind sex.
But mind sex. Mind we were mind-effing each other. But you can swear, it's fine. But I try not to often. But we were, I was prepping for an anal sex workshop. And Hernando does a lot of workshops. And I was like, I'm just so much better working with you, with someone one-on-one. And we put together, you know, we talked a lot about anal. And you're an anal connoisseur.
I'd have to say that that's my favorite coffee shop to go to.
Yeah.
My favorite latte.
Yeah, exactly. I thought we could just do a little rundown here. These are like common questions. You know, people are really, you know, obsessed. A lot of people are kind of obsessed with anal sex too and like want to know like, you know, what do you think like the appeal is or why people are so obsessed with it?
Well, I think part of the appeal about anal sex is also because it's in that area of the butt. And I think there's a lot of, there's boob men, there's butt men, there's, you know, people who have different parts of the body. But when you're really into the ass, anal just makes sense. And so for a lot of people, especially Latin guys like myself or black guys or people of color, you know, different cultures, it just seems to be like this desire to want to engage with like the curvature and the hourglass sort of nature, you know, area of.
Look, he's like gripping an ass right now as he's talking. It's very sexy. He's like the ass. I'm like, wow.
I'm making like melons in my hand. But and so I think that it for people, that physical arousal does transfer into a lot of their desires. And then also anal has this wonderful taboo sort of context to it that really does, I think, get under people's skin and psychologically just get them excited and aroused.
Because of the taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. And people always want to know, like, how do I do it better? Or they're afraid of it. We're going to be answering some emails about it. But let's just break down some of the myths, let's say, or taboos, fears. The butt is exit only, not for pleasure. You know, we hear that, like, why do anal? You know, when you can like have so many, you have the vagina, or it's not even an erogenous zone.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. It can be, for some people, it might be painful. They don't want, I mean, it might be not an erogenous zone, but for many, many it is. And a lot of pleasure from it.
I think a lot of people never give it a chance.
Right.
And they have it in their mindset already that, hey, this is not a place where I should go to, that the exit only sort of philosophy is what I live and stand by. And they don't even experiment and explore. And imagine if we just denied ourselves from trying out something that could be so enjoyable or pleasurable. I always use the sushi metaphor. Like, how many of us did not want to try sushi that first time?
Yeah, I didn't.
Like, raw fish? Are you kidding me? Like, no, I'm not eating that. Like, cook it,
right,
please. And then all of a sudden, how many times do you...
If I could, I would eat it breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
I love sushi.
What's your favorite kind of sushi?
I just like a good tuna roll. Like tuna... spicy tuna, or eel and avocado roll, yellowtail, hamachi. Oh my God, I'm getting so hungry.
When it melts in your mouth.
Tuna tataki, it's so good.
That's what anal sex can do.
Okay, so anal sex can melt in your mouth. It's true. But people say, another thing, speaking of melting in your mouth, it's too dirty, it's messy, it's painful to be sexy, people think. But you know, no, it can be, you know, there's poop in there. They think, oh, it can't be sexy, but we're going to tell them how it can be. Anal sex is only for gay men. And if you like it, that means that you're gay. People say that too. Not true, you're a straight man.
I am.
You identify straight.
I identify straight.
And you like anal play in your anal?
I like it.
Anus?
Oh, with my partners and with myself. So for me, it's an area that has so many nerve endings, and it can be so, like we said, taboo and arousing and pleasurable that we might as well explore to see if we have compatibility with our partners in that area. And this whole idea that it's dirty or unhygienic, I mean, look, when we take a shower, when we cleanse ourselves, when we do a little bit of prep work, I mean, that's how our bodies work, and we can, you know, freshen them up to a in my opinion, to a place where we can feel really good about the sexual experiences and the scents and the tastes and the touches that we have.
Right. But how did you get into it? How did you, like, the first time you tried it? Were you with a partner, or did you with your own anus?
Oh,
because a lot of
for
men,
myself or
yeah,
for,
because
with
I've
a
always,
partner.
Well, it doesn't, however you first, because a lot of men, that I think that's the biggest thing I hear is guys are like, well, now I feel like men are starting to say, I'm kind of curious, but I'm not really sure what to do. You know, like, and all the things, like, does it make me gay? But you know, they don't know how to even stimulate themselves.
Right.
So, I mean, I know you're a sex educator and doctor and all that. But.
You know, for myself, it was about a partner who just was moseying on around that area and just, like, started grazing in that region with their finger. And I thought, you know, there was, like, a conflict I was experiencing. It was like, wow, that feels really good. But, whoa, that's not, like, what I'm supposed to be feeling, or
right,
I shouldn't be liking that. So I'm going back and forth kind of in my head, and you're kind of like, yes, more, no, please stop. And yes, no, more, please stop, you know.
Right.
And I just found that, you know, once you get comfortable with somebody and you want them.
Was it a finger the first time?
No, it wasn't even inside. It was just on the outside.
Oh, right, the outside, because there are so many nerve endings. It can feel really good.
Yeah.
And
a lot of women will, you know, play with your balls, and they'll kind of like go a little bit south and then start playing with your perineum. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, that does feel kind of good. And then there's just like this accidental graze on the anus. And then you're like, you could do that again if you want.
Right.
But you don't know how to say it because you're like.
Right, because people don't know how to communicate. So what did you say? You're like, do that again.
Not the first time. No, I didn't say anything. I just like put in the memory box.
Right. You're like, oh, check.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then as we got, you know, we got more educated and more experienced, like all of a sudden we realized, oh, there can be like a communication about this, or we can incorporate some lube, or we can actually like involve this and enjoy it. So it's a process. I know a lot of people listening, that first step is the hardest one, and just being able to acknowledge it within yourself that this is a place where I can venture to explore.
Exactly, men and women. It's true, because a lot of women think that, you know, they don't like, you know, they think they don't like anal sex. They would never like it, or be bad. Maybe they had a bad experience, or it was really, really painful.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad experiences.
I know. First time, and they write it off forever because, you know, you didn't use lube, you weren't warmed up, someone just shoved it in. Like, no, that's not good. But that's why today we're going to tell you how to do it the right way.
Do you want to hear about my first experience on me?
Oh, yeah.
So I was always fascinated by it with my first college girlfriend, and, you know, she would allow me to try, and I didn't know what I was doing.
On her?
On her.
Okay.
I had no clue what I was doing. I was the, literally, I was just put a dunce hat on me. I was the most uneducated, worst anal sex experience ever. And
I'm sure a lot of women cannot relate to what you're saying right now. Right.
And I didn't know. I mean, I cared about her. I loved her. I didn't want to hurt her, but I didn't know I needed lube. So we would try these things with hands or body parts, penises, and no lube was involved. And just, I could only imagine the awful experience that she was having. And it was just the two of us not knowing what we were doing.
Right.
She didn't know to recommend it. I didn't know what to recommend.
How would you
it.
Know then? Right.
So once we were taking a shower, and she was always a trooper. She was always like trying and trying, and we just never could get, you know, it couldn't emulate like what I'd see in porn. And all of a sudden, we're in the shower, and she was such a passive, submissive, sweet, sweet girl. And just, she got this, like, rage inside of her as we were taking a shower together.
Wow.
She took her finger, and she just jammed it up inside of me. And I was literally plastered up against the tile, and I was just, like, my hands were spread. And I was like, what the, you know, what the hell are you doing? I was, like, under her total control. I couldn't move. I was like, and she says, now you know how it feels.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, whoa, that's awful. So we didn't do it again.
Wow.
After that.
No, she did that just to show you. Wow.
She didn't.
Anger.
Know. Yeah. She had
that's
a lot
the way to
built
show
up.
You. And it hurt. Right. You go, anyone goes right in like that.
Oh, it hurt like, oh.
Dude.
Worst pain
that's
of
a
life.
Good story. And then is that what turned you into a sex doctor? You're like, I want to get this right. I don't want to finger up my ass when I don't know. Okay. So let's talk about how to prep. What did you say? Did you pick up with her? That's kind of killer. Like, that's just like, that's like a drunken thing. She was like in the shower, premeditated, like, I'm going to stick this finger in your butt. Wow.
Yeah.
Because how would you know? Yeah, guys don't think about that. And women. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know. But that's what we're here to tell everyone.
But it taught me a lot. Like, she wasn't able to communicate that it was painful, and I wasn't able to ask those questions.
Right. We've all been there.
That was like our non-use of words to say, this hurts, and let's like take a break. Let's stop.
Because you kept trying.
Yeah.
You're like, I didn't know it was painful. Isn't it funny that when we, I mean, I've been there too. Things have hurt. I'm like, no, it's okay. You know, we're in pain. But that's why you should always speak up if you're in pain. And when you're not in pain, you should speak up about everything about sex, which is what we talk a lot about in the show. So let's talk about the preparation, getting ready for anal sex. So people are like, is it dirty? Like, how do I wash that area? Do I need to, you know, do an enema, like clear the runway? Like, what do you recommend? Like, I say you could do an enema if you wanted to.
You know, you could.
But it's not necessary.
You know, it's almost like some people say, well, I have to have a partner who takes a shower before we have sex. And some people are like, I don't really care. Like, I like the way you smell. And, you know, it's a little bit of the day has gone by. Like, I'm okay with it. So everybody's got their own sort of hygienic needs.
That's true.
But it should be talked about. We should get to know our partner's hygiene needs. And if playing in the anus or playing in the rectum is part of like your desires, you want to bring that up and just find out like where, how far should we go? Because we can make it squeaky, squeaky clean, or we can just sort of ride the wave of in the moment and just acknowledge that it might get a little dirty, it might get a little messy, but that could be okay.
Right. Because sex is messy. Sex can be messy. It's okay. But you know, just if you just want to do the basics, you can just shower, clean your genitals beforehand.
Right.
Use non-irritating soap, stick a little finger inside, rinse, you know, just do that. So I don't think that you, yeah, exactly. Case by case basis, decide how you feel about it and stick up for that. Safety first, condoms, and very important. Clean and trim. Hernando, you let me know that you trimmed your fingernails. Keith, I think you thought we were having anal
today. I didn't know if this would be an experiential.
Right, maybe.
Yeah.
We just started, so we'll see. So clean and trim fingernails, very important. Because we always think you should start with the finger.
Yeah. And one mistake I made today is I didn't file my nails.
I know, dude. I'm sorry. I was going to do it, but you didn't file. Damn you. Ah. Our most important starring role is lube.
Yes.
Besides your finger, penis, or toys. Lube, it makes any sexual experience more pleasurable. I just, you know how I feel about lube. The wetter, the better. And the anal canal not self-lubricating. Like the vagina will self-lubricate. The anus will not. Like you, like non-negotiable, you need lube during sex. But which lube is the best?
You know, I found out how dry it was back in college. And
exactly.
I never forgot that.
Never forgot it.
And we've got, I think, you and I were having a great discussion earlier about what can we do to help line that rectum?
Yes. And let's talk about it.
Want to talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. You showed me some, Hernando. Oh my God. We took some videos. I'm going to save the ones on Snapchat. But like he came in here with a huge box of sex toys. Butt plugs. And he was like, what did you say? You're like, what if I got hit walking across the street and butt plugs went like flying across Santa Monica Boulevard? And
that would have been hilarious. All over Hollywood.
I would have laughed. I mean, I would have saved you. I would have come to save you, but then I would have just had to take pictures of the butt plugs. But you brought some cool stuff. Should we talk about some of the stuff happening with lube?
Sure, sure. You know, so as you were saying, you know, the rectum doesn't self-lubricate like the vagina does. So we've got to take into consideration that the inside of the of during anal sex of the rectum is totally dry. And that's where a lot of pain comes from people. So what are we going to do about that? You know, sometimes something I call the squeegee effect is what a lot of people will do. And it's one way to try to lubricate the rectum, but it actually sometimes works against us or doesn't work very well. And what I mean by that is imagine the person putting all this lubrication on the penis, you know, or on the dildo or the toy, and they're going to have anal and they just like sort of insert it. And the anus itself, because it's closed and tight, actually it like squeegees a lot of that lube off.
Right.
So you're kind of inserting inside with very little lube.
Right.
But you think you put a lot of lube on.
Right, because you did. But
it's all on the outside, right, or most of it.
Right. So now we have what? We have the lube shooter.
Lube shooter,
Do you recommend the lube shooter?
I love them. I think they're really valuable, but it's not very sexy, especially if it's like a hookup or someone you're just sort of getting, you know, intimate with.
It literally looks like a water gun, but you shoot the, or like a shot.
Like a syringe.
Like a syringe, right.
You fill it up with lube and you sort of insert it gently.
Right.
Shoot inside.
Okay.
But they have these new products. They have these new like a gel sort of silicone capsules that you insert inside of the rectum and they actually dissolve. It takes about 15 to 30 minutes and it dissolves.
Just keeps dissolving in the alarm. That's really brilliant.
It's like a lube suppository. I think it's brilliant. You could use it for vaginal, but I think it's really beneficial for
you could use it for vaginal as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, yeah, that makes sense too because it's true. The lube, you gotta reapply. Don't be ashamed to reapply. Lube on every nightstand.
Emily, what do you think about water-based versus silicone?
For anal or for anything in life, I like them both. It depends what I'm doing. I like hybrid too. But I like silicone if you're using like skin condoms, which are polyisoprene. You don't have to worry about it as much. Silicone lasts longer. It's slippy.
Is it slippy?
Slippy.
Slippy.
And lasts longer. And you know, it could be a little harder to clean up, but I like it for anal.
Yeah.
But yeah, what about you?
I like silicone for anal for sure because because the water-based absorbs more in the rectum because it is a water absorption canal. So it will run out over time. So if you are a person who lasts longer or if it's kind of like, you know, it could dry up a little bit inside there, whereas the silicone would last a bit more. Personally, I've always liked a combination of different ones, but I'm kind of on this Wicked Ultra Kick. That's like my favorite lube right now. For anal, and then for if a partner is comfortable with vaginal silicone use, I like Uber Lube these days.
Yeah, so I like Uber Lube. I like Joe Lube. I like Joe. They make a bunch of different kinds.
Yeah, it's great lube too.
Yeah, like hybrids. Oh my God, they send us so much lube. I'm going to send you home with some lube.
I appreciate that.
How about
Thank
that?
You.
And yes. About plug. Oh, we did.
Wonderful.
We gave you the Black Pearl.
Yes.
The Vipertex, so you're going to try that tonight.
Give me your guinea pig.
But let's talk about all the tension we carry in our butt and why that's important to relax. Like, we walk around with tension in our butt.
Mm-hmm.
We do. And we don't breathe. We don't relax. And when we don't take breaths, I mean, that's a lot of times we tense up. We're nervous. It's like something's going in your anus for the first time or it could be the 10th time. We're still going to tense up if you're not sure. So you've got to really remember to breathe.
Right.
And to like massage the anus and to like work up the, like don't just go right for it. Even if you've got the lube, you've got the condoms, you got to still work it like foreplay, pre-anal foreplay. Very important. And it helps to be aroused. It helps if you're aroused beforehand, have a few, you know, orgasms beforehand.
That's one of the best. The muscular release of orgasm really relaxes people's butts. I mean, that's a wonderful way to get that sphincter muscle to just sort of like calm down and maybe be a little more inviting and.
Exactly.
Open their arms up and give us a big hug.
Exactly. A hug by your sphincter. Sphincter.
Yeah.
It sounds like, well, what?
A lot of people don't realize that our sphincters, we've got the internal and the external. So the outer and the inner sphincter. And so, you know, we can control the outer one. That's the one that we can like squeeze and wink and pucker.
And I always wink people with my sphincter. It's weird.
Are you an anal winker?
Yeah, I am. It's one on one scale. I can't wink really. Like I literally don't know how to wink with my eyes, but I can wink with my ass. It's weird.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
You had to pick one or the other.
Right.
You got the right one.
Thanks. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. I mean, have you checked out our incredible sponsors? We love them, and I know you will too. We'll be right back. I hope you guys are enjoying the show. The next half features author and porn star legend Nina Hartley and sex educators Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoinberg. I have an amazing woman sitting here in the studio with me. Nina Hartley, hello.
Hello.
Yay, I love the clapping. That's amazing. She, Nina is, if you don't know, which I can't imagine because everyone knows who Nina is, I feel, American pornographic actress, director, sex educator, feminist, author. You've been in how many films?
In about 900.
900 films. Ish-ish. And you're still doing films.
Oh, absolutely.
And everything. You're activist. You've done so many things. And I'm so in awe of your career and all the amazing things you've done. And we're going to talk about sex tonight. I mean, sex with Emily.
Really? But I if love anyone, that. I almost feel like topic.
I
should.
I know. How about that?
Isn't it awesome?
I know. And we're going to get into the stuff, all the things that you've ever wanted to ask Nina. And I feel like so many of my listeners, they need tips. They need advice, like for keeping their relationships interesting and how to have a spicy sex life. And I love oral sex tips. I always ask my guests. And I feel like you would have really good oral sex tips for women and for men. We're going to get into that, Nina. Sexy voice. Yeah. And Anderson, are you paying attention? Are you Anderson? Are you there? So I'm here with Anderson as well. And he's making everything run smoothly.
I make things sound good.
You make things sound pretty. You're not just a pretty face yourself.
You make you sound pretty, thank as you. Does Nina, and I just make sure that the levels are good. That's all I
know,
I do.
But you're doing good. Okay. So, Nina.
Yes.
I don't even know. I was like, Nina, I mean, there's so many things that Nina can talk about. And so I feel like, tell me what you're up to now. So, tell me what's going on in your life now that you're excited about. What are you working on? Nina.com, which is amazing. You have that URL.
Right. Yeah. Nina.com is my website. Pay site. And it's XXX. I do need to... I've been doing this 32 years since I started dancing and 30 years in porn. And I am now old enough to have children in their 30s. But as I tell the young people with whom I work, you know, I'm old enough to be your mother, but I'm no one's mother, so it's not creepy.
Right, exactly.
So I have been working, putting more energy into branching out just in terms of talking and teaching, because I've been a feminist my whole life. And so I remember the early days of the conversation about pornography and sex and sexuality and sexual expression from the 70s, and now I have 40 years perspective on how's that working for you.
Right, exactly.
So I'm the age of a lot of young people's parents, and so but I'm not a parent, so I'm not icky.
Right.
So I wanted to give back to the community. I want to talk to young adults about what I wish I'd known about sex when I was their age.
What is so? When you say young, you're talking about people in their 20s.
I'm talking for me, 18 to 30. I'm 54. I could easily have a 30-year-old child.
Yeah,
without it being weird.
Right.
And if I'd had a child right out of high school, that person would be 30. Two of my favorite playmates were born the year I graduated high school, and they're 35. It blows my mind. But I see them as peers because they're.
What
adults.
Do you mean your playmates? People that you play with, have sex with?
Right. I am. I am not a monogamous person, and okay. I'm also queer, so I have a large circle of poly, bi, queer, non-monogamous,
right,
polymorphously perverse.
Exactly.
So I live a very sexually open lifestyle, and what people get confused about who are not wired this way is they confuse open with anarchic, with like no rules at all,
right.
And what it really is, it's a kind of sexual orientation that works best when you keep it within people of your like orientation.
Right.
So the people with whom I play, and for me play is almost always some kind of sexual intention, mm-hmm. if not actual genital contact, are people who share my sexual values, my sexual outlook, most of my overlaps sexual philosophy enough that we can cohabit the same space and share some kind of mutual good time. And I don't try to do that with people whose sexual values and boundaries don't mesh with mine. And the biggest thing I could tell anybody as a young adult is figure out what, and this is something you can do alone while reading, you don't even have to do it with anybody, it's just something inside yourself. What do I seem to be? I'm strongly pulled toward monogamy. I'm strongly pulled toward non-monogamy, but I feel guilty about it because of what I've been told. So am I really monogamous and wanting a fantastical dream? Or am I actually a non-monogamous person burdened with guilt? So we have to investigate.
Exactly.
So, and on and on. So my playmates, and they're 35, and they're born the year I graduated high school. It's like, get the F out of Dodge.
Right,
oh,
exactly.
My God.
But
I feel more alive than ever. I wouldn't go back and be 35 again if you paid me, because at 35, I was entering the most unhappy period of my first marriage.
Okay.
Where I was craziest and most absolutely... So I've been unhappily married. I'm happily married now. And I have insights I can impart to people. And also the whole thing about personal responsibility. Stop feeling like such a victim. I'm sure you talk about that with people all the time.
Yes.
feeling like a victim in their own life, in their own,
especially when it comes to sex. Poor me, and you know, pull up your big person panties,
right? Exactly.
And we're not talking about actually having been victimized. Obviously, we're not talking about violence.
No, but
we're talking
about
where you do when you're crazy. You keep picking the wrong partners.
Oh,
you have this pattern that you act out again and again. You realize, and after the third time, it is you.
Exactly. Like, what's the common denominator here? Oh, okay, it's me. I know. I fully blame myself for all of my mistakes now. Like, I think it's so funny in all my relationships. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is my pattern. And people don't stop, and they don't stop and look at themselves. But I think it's interesting. So you've been, have you always known that you were non-monogamous or when you were in your marriage?
Yes, and I never had a monogamous fantasy in my life. I always fantasized about them. I never fantasized about him. And I always felt strange about that. So when it comes to sex, I feel like Spock. I just never... And if you have friends who are very, very strongly gay, they'll tell you, oh, I knew from first grade. Oh, I knew since I was 5 years old. Oh, absolutely. And you know people like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am not. So my sexuality is as strong and inborn in me as their gayness. But because I didn't have language for it, I didn't know that it had to do with relational orientation.
Right.
Or because poly is and monogamous is separate from gay or kinky or bisexual. And it says, how do you want to run your romantic life? And I'm very happy. I need a wide variety of people with whom I can be sexual. And I have a husband, and people will say, Nina, why be married if you're not going to be monogamous?
Right.
And I say, well, my husband's my through partner. So all the sex I have is intentional.
Right.
We negotiate it. We are doing it deliberately. It's not because someone got drunk. So each time I'm with someone, that's a beautiful bead. Maybe this is a carved ivory bead, or this is a Murano glass bead, or this is a Hopi Indian bead. And I string all those beads on the through relationship I have with my husband. And they, for me, that balances out.
Right. And does he see other people as well? Or?
Nothing seriously. I'm polyamorous. He's non-monogamous.
Okay.
but the orientations work well enough that we can make it work. My primary, when I got out of my first marriage, I knew that I would be single until I was dead and have cats and lovers before I would ever consent again to be with a possessive partner. I've been struggling with my guilt over wanting a non-possessive partner for so long. And I'm struggling over my guilt about desiring multiple people because person A would get so hurt that I expressed an interest in person B because person A felt that my interest in person B therefore meant less for him or her.
Right.
And or you like B because you don't like me. You like B because I'm deficient. It's like, no, I like A and B.
And there's enough for everyone,
and
right?
From as a poly person, A is A. Nothing else can be A, and nothing else can be you. And you can't. They don't compete.
Exactly.
So if there's another slender, attractive, accomplished, intelligent young brunette woman over here, who can rock the plaid pants, which I no longer bother trying to wear, and if there's someone who on the surface of it looked a lot like you, I would not be confused because you're you. And she would be her. And so you vibrate this string in that harmonic resonance way, and she can't pluck your string.
Right, exactly.
Only
people
you
get
or
jealous
you.
And they're possessive, and so I totally understand. Do you think that there's a lot of people, do you find, that would be non-monogamous or polyamorous if they could, but they don't even think that's an option because they have to be monogamous? Or do you think really, like, a lot of people are, you know, I think a lot of people are suffering through monogamy.
I think monogamy is an honest orientation. I think a solid 20% of people are truly monogamous.
Right.
One partner is all they want, and they're devoted their whole lives, and it's not a burden. And it's what they want.
They chose it.
They are it.
Right.
This is it. I met your mother when we were 15. I fell in love and never looked at another woman since. And I've met enough couples like that to know that for some people is true. And then there is 20% of the people like me who are fully acclimated to a functioning, healthy, non-monogamous relational style and have a good partner and are okay with that. And the other 60% are struggling with some balance of it. So it's not that I think more people would be non-monogamous. I think more people could be more open and fluid than are now if it were considered a healthy option. Right now, you know, monogamy is the only thing that's helpful, healthy and normal and mature and respectful. I would never put up with my partner. You let him do what?
Right.
You let her do what? It's like not letting.
Right.
So clearly, can't be with someone like you. And I tried that. I tried very hard. I fail at monogamy. I completely am
capable. I did too.
I ended up being a cheater.
Right.
I ended up being a liar. I ended up withholding. It was it was crazy. So, but if what I really was, why I want to strangle them,
okay,
at people and say, well, you know, I want other partners, but I don't want my partner to have anybody else. It's like, then you are too immature for this. You don't get to have the cookie.
Right.
Because this is a two-way street.
Exactly.
Now, because in our culture, people get stunted emotionally at very young ages around sexuality and pleasure and what do I get to have in the world. And then they grow up to be big people and they interact with another adult person. And then a trigger gets pushed. All of a sudden, they're, again, a very young child and they don't want to have to deal with their stuff. You have to do it first because I'm not going to. It's like, I thought I was dating a grown-up.
Exactly.
Right. I kept waiting for to want kids and it never... the joke now is at the factory they forgot to wind my biological clock.
Exactly. That's what I always say. I'm I don't have one. I love kids.
I love them.
But let's go back to your childhood. So you grew up in Berkeley, California, which I just moved to LA from San Francisco. So my heart is still in San Francisco.
It'll always be
so
there,
what was it like?
Niners!
Go Niners. Growing up in Berkeley then, what were your parents like? Were they...
Oh, my parents are totally alt. My father was a blacklisted radio personality. So I grew up after he'd been blacklisted.
He was
the last people McCarthy got. And my mother, they had a pretty modern marriage, and my mother was going back to school to get her master's, and she had a job too. And so I grew up in a very avant-garde female breadwinner, male homekeeper household 20 years before that was popular. So that was very difficult for everybody involved.
I'm sure it must have been.
So I was the youngest, and so I had a lot of time to myself to pursue my own interests. My parents were all of the 60s deeply into therapy. Can tell you
everything.
You got and in 1969 they found Zen Buddhism and started studying that seriously. In 1973 they quit, my mother quit her job and became full-time students, and my mother is a senior priest at the Zen Center in San Francisco.
So
I was a lonely child. Yes, my parents feel very bad about that,
right.
But the positive thing out of all of that is that they show by their example that you can, their life had been upended by my father's blacklisting. The plan they have themselves 65 miles an hour into the brick wall. And so they showed me that a person can cast about and find the best way to make an honorable and meaningful life for yourself according to your own needs. And for a proto-queer kid who didn't know that word yet, it was very, very liberating, because part of what they also looked at was sexuality. And then there was a feminist movement where I got some of the source material, because of these brand new ideas. And so there was, before the anti-pornography feminists took over the whole wing of feminism, there was actually quite open discussion about sex workers' rights and when women's bodies beautiful. It was this really great, it was very empowering that the thinking about, but I was younger enough that I wasn't fully an adult. I hadn't become an adult in that environment. So I was reading people's projections on a utopian way of being around sexuality young enough that I grew into it.
And you lived it, and you're living it now.
And if I'd had a little more FUU effing F, I would have not put up with some of what I put up with. I was quite codependent for a number of years.
Okay.
And so in my secret mind, I wanted to be braver like Betty Dodson. In my real life, I just couldn't quite break that pattern until I finally did at 40. It's like, oh, I'm holding myself back.
Right. I'm excited for today's show. Hello, Sonny and Ken. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having us on.
It's awesome. We just met. So Sonny and Ken are a dynamic duo sexologists. They have a show on Showtime, Sex with Sonny Megatron.
Yeah.
So you guys met on FetLife.
That was my question.
I wanted to ask how you guys met. So were you both... You had already been Ken in this world
For many years. Yeah,
he like it was born kinky. I had it.
Yeah,
suppressed.
I started kink in the 80s.
You were the pioneer. No, it's been around. That's cool. So you were in the 80s. So you met, and were you just like timidly going on FetLife because you hadn't really?
Yeah. I actually.
You didn't seem timid to me.
Well, you know, I was just exploring around. I actually met a couple of people on Craigslist, which I'm still here. Then they're like, hey, there's a site, FetLife. And so I was just slowly dipping my toes into the water, like all of the things that I imagined and that, you know, my fantasies I touched myself to that I didn't really think people did in real life. I was like, there's a whole community. I had no idea.
So you weren't even... I mean, you didn't think they did it in real life. So were you just like, what were you watching? Porn?
The first exposure to kink I had was the Anne Rice beauty series. I read when I was 22 or something.
Okay.
And it was so dirty, but it was so hot. And I thought, seriously, that me and Anne Rice were the only two people that had like a weird, perverted, dirty imagination.
You're like, nobody else thinks this way.
Right. Yeah. And I had no idea. No, I was completely naive.
And then you were married?
Yes. Well, it was a long-term relationship.
Okay, long-term relationship.
Married. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And that was just like you were in the slump and you were just, nothing. So yeah. You had these fantasies still, but you don't know how to, you weren't like, it wasn't with your partner.
So I became single. The economy went into a slump. I got laid off from my job. So it was kind of the perfect opportunity to reinvent myself. And boom, met Ken. Here we are.
Okay, so what happened? Tell me. So you go on FetLife looking for, like, what was it about Ken's, like, profile? Like,
well, he approached me first, and he commented, I got courage enough to put a picture of my boobs on the internet. Not my face. Not my face and my boobs at the same time.
Together, right. Yeah. Right. I would never recommend that.
And he was like, hey, nice boobs. And that was our first connection. And he seemed really...
Which is a great thing. And that he says, you know, there's your left boob is bigger than your right boob. Like, that wouldn't have been great. But nice boobs is good.
Yeah. Well, nice boobs. Because my saggy grandma boobs. So I was like, he likes my saggy grandma boobs.
I do. I love them. I like natural boobs.
And, you know, I checked out his profile and he seemed smart and, you know, intelligent and good looking and witty, except for he was into clown sex. And I was like, what? He seems so normal. Like, what is this dressing as a clown and having sex? And then as I got to know him, we kind of melded in that way, because to me, having silly sex, like you saw us with the unicorn mask. When you see 50 Shades of Grey, it's very serious. I am the Dom. Get down on your knees. I'm going to punish you. And I can't. I laugh. I'm like, are you kidding me? Right. Are you serious? I can't.
One of our first scenes together was she used to do miming, and she dressed up like a mime. I was a clown, and I was like chasing around and torturing her at an S&M party.
And I couldn't
talk.
That
was your first date?
Tell her what her safe word was.
My safe word was just like me doing jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
Mime, and
or she was trapped
talk.
In a box. No, that was our... fourth or
this
fifth
is a good
day.
Time. Wait, okay, got it. So clown sex. So this is your first thing. Like, I'm into clown sex. Were you like, what is that? Like, you dress like a clown. Like, you juggle.
A little of both.
And
balloon bondage. That's one of the other things. Is I was really into balloon bondage. So I started off teaching rope bondage for many, many years. And so I took the kind of balloons, the real big, skinny, long ones that you do balloon animals with. And I would learn how to make handcuffs. I would do a complete like mummification on somebody, where I would start wrapping at their feet and go all the way up to the top of their head and put silly kind of like big penis hats on them, and then like make wrist restraints, and then take a single tail whip, and I would like take off the balloons one at a time, and it was just a lot of fun. So it sounds really scary, and it's literally just scary sounding, because they pop, and there's like, when a balloon pops, there's actually a sonic boom that's created. So it's just a little bit ouchy. It's because the whip never hits you. The only thing that happens is the balloon pops on your skin. So psychologically, it sort of screws with your head a little bit, but it's not really going to hurt you.
So you guys are into BDSM, but not... It's not in a different way.
I was interested in BDSM, but I didn't know that you could, because I'm a very humorous person. Right. I couldn't be serious. And for me, it was like, oh my goodness, sex doesn't have to be serious. I was always afraid, like, my hair's going to get messed up and my makeup's going to get messed up and I'm going to have the fat rolls and my one boob's going to be in my armpit. And being a clown and having fun
BDSM.
So you
were a clown too? After she met me.
I realized it gave me permission to have my funny, silly, messy, laughy sex that I always wanted to have, but I thought I had to be like the movies where it was so serious.
Right, like in your laundry.
No, I'm like,
perfect, right.
But you know, but seriously, sex is funny. There's noises. People fart. There is all sorts of groans and moans.
And it's okay.
And it's okay to do that,
Is it bad? I farted. Is he ever going to call? I'm like, and if he doesn't, he's not the guy for you. Like,
yeah, totally.
You know? Like, it is messy. And if you want to be with someone who respects you, who's like into whatever, your period happens, you know,
right?
Yep, deal with it. Absolutely.
So then clown sex, then he had you at clown sex, and then how else did you like open up together? Would you say like you've always been into more kinkier stuff? So what was like the next?
I started being a submissive for Ken. I started out that way. I really tried, and I realized
she did a really good job.
It wasn't for her.
Like it, living in that way, like you guys, like
no.
Just when you had sex.
Just in the bedroom. I can't live that way. But in the bedroom, I tried bottoming and taking the spankings, and he can be really really sadistic, and I have a high pain tolerance, but I wasn't quite into it. And then I realized, like, I want to be you. I want to be the dominant one. And it was hard for me to embrace that, you know, to be like, I'm in control in the bedroom, because right. I've never played that role before. So we have an open relationship. I kind of became his co-pilot.
Which was awesome, because so I let her know that you don't have to be in one category. You can try. I was a submissive when I started off because I wanted to try all this stuff so I know what it feels like to do to somebody else. And with her, I said, you can totally be a top if you want. You can be the one in charge, or you can be an evil assistant. And she can actually be more sadistic and funny than I can as the evil assistant.
I love being the evil assistant, because in order to be a dominant, and especially one that is as sadistic as he is, it takes a lot of planning. And I am too busy. I have two kids. I am planning everything all the time. Okay. I don't want all that preparation and cleanup. So he's in charge of all of the prep work. I just step in when it's like, whose ass do you want me to hit?
Right.
And it's perfect.
And then how do you, okay, so you guys are, okay, back up. This is so interesting. So you're in an open relationship. Yeah, you are married.
And we are married, but we have always been in an open relationship. In fact, I think it took us a year before we actually said, I love you to one another.
And admitted we were a thing.
Yeah. And then we moved in shortly thereafter, and her and the girls moved in, and now we're just a big happy family.
Okay. And do the girls, so your kids, do they know that you're in an open relationship and they know what's going to,
We don't really talk about that with them. My older one is in college. She's going into her second year in college. She knows. I mean, I've talked about it when we were dating, but she isn't really like, so mom, you know, where are you going Friday night or anything? We don't.
You know, that's a really good question. But the thing that I think, my kids could be 50 years old and I don't think I'd talk about my sex life to them.
Right, because they're your kids.
It just isn't pertinent.
Right. No, I got it. Okay. So you guys, how do you find so is it constant, there's obviously times where just the two of you, but is it usually every weekend you have a new person, or do you guys each see people separately? How does your
actually very rare?
Work?
It's actually very rare, and it's funny because we were talking about the more that we date other people, and it's more on a casual basis. It's not like we want to meet a third partner and all.
We don't want that.
It's just for fun, and the more that we date other people, the more we realize what a pain in the ass other people are, and that we like each other.
Oh, that's kind of good. Yeah, see, I think that's healthy in a way. You're like, I want to go out there, and then I'm like, oh, God,
it satisfies our curiosity. Yeah. Satisfies our curiosity and cements the fact, I don't want to put up with anybody else's BS but his BS.
And it's interesting because having an open relationship for us, I have, the older I get, the more I have younger women that are attracted to me because they have sort of a daddy, daddy thing.
You're
going on. Yes, I am.
You're
a DILF.
DILF.
And one of the issues that we had is that the more the younger girls were attracted to me, the more I was sort of bored with them, because it took the having an open relationship in a way takes the naughtiness out of it, because I have permission and license to do almost anything I want, and that actually makes it less naughty, believe it or not. And so
that's why people like to cheat. They're like, wow.
Totally. But we have an open relationship. You know, there's times when I do hook up with somebody, it might be 3 in the morning, I'm at a party or a social event, and usually we're together 90% of the time. But if I'm alone, I'll call her up and say, hey, this girl wants to give me a blowjob, is that okay? And she says, yeah, have good sex, I'm going to bed.
Seriously? So this is how it works. So you couldn't just get the blowjob that's because every couple in an open relationship has to make their own rules.
Right.
Right.
So you're like, hold on, babe, there, your pants might even be, you're like, I just got a call, and then you check in.
Yeah. No, I don't unzip anything until I get permission from her first.
Do you ever say no, Sonny?
No.
Not yet.
No. We have veto power, and I reserve that for just, you know, if someone gives me a really bad vibe, but I haven't really had that. You know, sometimes I'm like, oh God, she's a flake. You know, this is going to last a week.
Oh yeah.
And
basically, she could do the odds in Vegas for the relationship status I have with other people. She's like, this one's going to take about 3 weeks, and she's usually right.
That's great.
And oftentimes, you know, when we say hook up, it doesn't have to be anything sexual. It could purely be just a BDSM thing. I want you to flog me. I want you to kind of mess with my mind, and there's not sex involved.
Do you guys ever just have vanilla sex though some nights?
Most of the time.
Because it's a lot of work to do all the prep and set it up, right?
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it's funny though, because sometimes it's impromptu.
That's the thing, is that you normalize sex.
Yeah.
Because everyone just wants to know if they're normal. It's fine. It turned you on. You're everything's good, you know?
And the thing is, you know, with from the most bizarre to the most mundane type of sex that we show on the show, it's basically if you break all of those things down to their basic common denominator. you know, I want to feel connected to my partner, or I want to feel uninhibited, not like I have to be perfect, or, you know, I want to, if someone wants to be, let's say, controlled and they're submissive, it's because when I'm being controlled, I feel loved and like somebody cares right. about me. So when you break it down to the basic need or the basic feeling, these things aren't so weird. We're all looking for the same things. They just manifest differently for whoever is into whatever.
Right. Thank you all. Thank you to my amazing team here. Thank you, Shannon and Jenny and Jamie. And thank you to Ken, producer Lark, and Michael. And thanks everyone for subscribing to the show on iTunes and reviewing it. We love that. And thanks everyone for listening. Was it good for you? Text Ask Emily to 797979.